And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding.
How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding here on the Athletic NBA Show. I am Jared Weiss. He's Anthony Slater. Andrew Schlecht on the boards at his in-laws. It's loud there. That's why we got him on mute. But Anthony Slater is quiet where he is in the Bay. I'm in the Bay as well. Got a beautiful view here up on the 36th floor, and I may never leave, but we're going to have to leave at some point because Game 5 is in San Francisco on my birthday on Monday, that we head back for a Game 6 in Boston after that, and then who knows after that? So let's see what is going to happen over the next couple games. Anthony Slater, Steph Curry is going to happen. We know that. And, is he having his best finals ever so far?
Yes, number one. Number two, happy birthday. Did not know that on Monday. Three, I hope you're enjoying the San Francisco fog rolling in, you know, up there on the 30th floor.
It's actually gorgeous. It's amazing.
Yes, for sure. Especially when you're not outside in it, you can just look at it.
It was funny how my beautiful view just like disappeared out of nowhere all of a sudden when I got in last night.
Yeah, that's San Francisco. This is Steph Curry's first San Francisco Finals. This is, you know, statistically, I'd say his best. He's just really hot from three, which, you know, at various times of the season, he wasn't necessarily hot from three. He's just in one of his streaks, which is coming at a very good time for the Warriors, a necessary time. Also, you know, in his past finals, you know, we're talking about the Cleveland ones, you know, two of them, Durant was just like awesome in that matchup. Cleveland, Ty Lue loved to like blitz Steph, double Steph, and that led to KD just having just monster series when they need him. The Toronto series, Steph was productive. He had a 47-point game, but that's when Nick Nurse deployed the box and won. That's when I think like this latest surge of like very Steph Curry focused defensive strategies really kind of took shape. You know, that was almost the birthplace of, hey, KD's leaving, because KD was gone in that finals. Klay Thompson's hurt. Let's just throw everything at Steph. And that's really been the last few seasons. I think he's solved those defenses somewhat over the last few seasons. He's just seen so many of them with all the different intention and strategies that he's just gotten better against them, smarter against them. And then also he's better built, stronger, especially if you go back to the pre-Durant finals, you know, Cleveland Cavs and the Ty Lue, they love to just beat him up, you know, like, you know, check him when he comes through the lane, do all that. Go look at those highlights. He's much skinnier. He's just a bigger, more well-conditioned athlete now. And I think this deep in the season against a physical team like Boston, that added strength, added conditioning matters. And you're seeing it. I mean, he, once again, just like when Jason Kidd said in the West Finals, he's the best conditioned athlete in the league. He just looks like the guy who can, you know, has the best endurance on the floor at all times.
It's funny because Marcus Smart's a defender who usually beats the crap out of everybody. And I haven't really noticed that happening in the series at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Steph's getting beat up, obviously. I mean, he even had the foot thing, you know, late in game three, obviously. But he's just more than ever. I think Steve Kerr had a good quote early in the series. He said he's to the point that he can run 50 screen and rolls a game and, you know, defend 50 screen and rolls a game. And like, you know, who else in the league can just, because he does get picked on at times, just, you know, Jason Kidd really did it relentlessly in the last series, but it's just, even if you do kind of beat him up, I just feel like he's just a boxer who has been through it and has trained his body 365 days a year to take this type of beating.
Yeah, he's got a chin on him, that's for sure. So, the one thing the Celtics haven't done much is blitz. And I know people constantly talk about, like, why don't you blitz? Why are you in drop? And let's get into what that really means, because the Celtics are in a lot of the time a deep drop. And why don't you, I guess, first help us understand what is the reason that they do that? It's obviously not that they think like they have to stop Steph Curry from driving past everybody. So why are they doing that?
You're talking about why do other teams do the blitz?
Why do other teams do the blitz, and why are the Celtics deciding to drop?
I mean, first of all, you have to meet him further out than anybody ever is, like, I guess the main reason you want to at least be high on the screen. But teams like, you know, Nick Nurse back in the day, Jason Kidd did it, you know, at times in the West Finals, he is by far the most dangerous weapon on the floor. You don't trust or respect the other offensive weapons as much, and you just want the ball out of his hands. You prefer at times 4-on-3 with a scrambling defender trying to get back in the play than you prefer Steph Curry, you know, playing against just traditional coverage, because Steph Curry, if you allow him to pull up all game, that's a much more, you know, the belief would be that's a more efficient offensive approach than at this point Draymond Green going downhill, especially with the funk Draymond Green is in offensively.
Yeah, they don't want to get him started, and that's why they generally sit. So I guess my qualm with the Celtics is there are times when you're in a deep drop just because you're like Curry is so insanely high up that if you come up too far and then he rejects the screen or he sneaks back, then you're completely out of the play. So that's why they want to sit a little bit. But I think there's also just a lot of times where because Golden State, like, they mix up their screen levels from like 25 feet out the 3-point line to like 30 feet to like 40 feet. It's so different every single time that I think that these offenders, they see the 3-point line as kind of like their starting point, like, and they kind of use that as their mark. And then the screen is even higher than they expected, and they're just already too deep. And I don't necessarily think it's like, I guess it's like maybe they should be reading the screen a little bit more instead of relying on the 3-point line. And I think Horford is good at that. Rob Williams is just not there yet. You know, he still needs a few more years of basketball IQ development to get there. But that's why I feel like, you know, Horford, I think, has done a really good job with it. There's been a few lapses. There's a few times where I've written about this where he's backpedaling instead of like shot, like side shuffling. And he's cleaned that up a few times, but then it kind of goes back and forth because it's always hard to read. Like, do I want to force Curry out to the side where then he could just sneak back the other way and blow by me, you know, and things like that. So like the reason why the drop coverage often looks wrong is because Steph Curry is like the best player in the league. Right now he certainly is. And like, you're just constantly scared of him and it's constantly messing with you. And you just see that at times. And I feel like that's why the Celtics haven't blitzed, is just because they would just rather deal with this like one thing that, even though it's impossible to solve, it's like, at least it's like one thing and they can keep working on it, rather than those blitzes where there's just so much more room for creativity for the rest of the team to move the ball in different directions.
You also, and you would know better than me, like, the Celtics didn't blitz much during the regular season or at all, right? Or like
at all. No.
Yeah. So that's the other challenge. And it's why Houston used to, like, when Houston knew they were going to face the Durant Warriors, Mike D'Antoni that season said switch all season long, because he wanted his defense to be as switch ready for the West Finals, because they knew who they had to go through to play the West. So even if it wasn't a matchup you wanted to switch, it was like practice switching. Just be a switch team, because you know the team you're going to have to beat, we're going to want to play switch against. Where, you know, it probably is unwise for Boston to go super blitz heavy, because you don't want to be trying something new against a team that has seen the blitz a ton. You know, like, it, suddenly you're like trying to blitz, and suddenly, you know, you might not know all, like, you know, the backside switching and rotations that you need. Whereas the Warriors, and that's the other thing about this offensive machine they have, they've seen it all, they've practiced against it all, they know all their triggers. You know, if it is a blitz, we're doing this. If it is a drop coverage, we're doing this. So if I'm Boston, where I'm with you is, like, do what you're best at. Like, hope that your defensive machine that you have practiced is better than theirs. And it still might be. I mean, obviously, the way how hot he is from three is probably making it harder to just stay in this type of coverage. But if this is what you're best at, try to win the title doing it, probably.
Yeah, because I think the main reasons why they don't blitz also is just that they don't want to wear their own guys out. Like, Ime's always taken the rope-a-dope approach, where Udoka wants to stay in more simple, I shouldn't say simple, but like less sprint-heavy defensive schemes, so that his team maintains stamina late in games. And their path of success in these playoffs has been that they're not burned out by the end of the game, and their depth holds up by the end of the game while the other team starts to kind of falter and their stars start to lose a little bit of that steam in the early fourth quarter. And that's when they can make their push. And it just, we've only had one crunch time so far. Obviously, it worked really well in the earlier wins, but we finally had one full crunch time and we just saw that Steph is impervious to anything, really. Like, there's no variable that's going to really throw him off his game. Like, he came through, it was incredible in game four at the end. So it does make you wonder at this point. Like, we saw Ime tighten the rotation as the series went on, and it looks like Kerr's kind of doing that too. We know that that's always going to happen. And then we also just know that usually defensive coverages are going to get more aggressive as the series goes on. So maybe game five is when we see that switch.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the tightening rotations, and that's interesting. It may be getting to another topic for us. But, you know, Steph is more free on the floor when in this series when Draymond Green's not on it. You know, especially, you know, it's why they made the starting lineup change, because Draymond and Looney can crunch up the offensive side of the floor. It's by far their best defensive lineup. But they went with Otto Porter ahead of Looney because they want to separate Looney and Draymond. And then late, as everybody knows, Looney was playing better. And Steve Kerr, for really the first time ever, went away from Draymond Green in a big fourth quarter. Eventually went back to him, got back to him. But that is becoming an interesting kind of rotational pivot point for Kerr, with the fact that, like, Looney's been better in this series. He seemed to be a better person within this matchup. And there are times where they'll have him on the floor together, but I think, you know, you might see Draymond Green's minutes, unless he figures something out on the offensive end, tick down a little bit, because that's for a Curry offensive environment, sometimes better to not have him out there.
Yeah. So the you're right. 'Cause the big thing is that when Green is on the floor, he doesn't really do they don't put him in the dunker spot often, which I feel like is one place they could put him. They don't have him doing a ton of the screening and pick and roll. A lot of the time he's out on the elbows or the corners, and the Celtics do not guard him out there. And it's what's really interesting is a lot of the time when a guy gets the ball out in those spaces, usually you at least kind of like stunt at him a little bit just to kind of make him start thinking and make him think, like, do I have to take that shot? Because you're almost hoping he'll take that shot and bail out the possession for you. The Celtics aren't even doing that. They just, like, look at him, and then they just sink back and they start looking elsewhere. They don't even have eyes on him when he's holding the ball. And so Kerr's recognized that. And I think what's nice is that Kerr brought him in for the offense-defense switches late in the game, and that worked so well because when he was out there on defense late in the game, he was getting some stops. Like, he was really crucial at the end. He got a few. There was that one possession where he took away Marcus Smart threes twice in one possession. Like, that was phenomenal. And then they're able to get him off, and then the Warriors have that speed and spreading that they need on offense to give Steph the room that he needs to hit shots. So, like, maybe Kerr will just call timeout over and over and over again and intentionally foul over and over again to just offense, defense, switch Draymond throughout the game. But if you can't do that, then obviously it is a serious issue. But I guess the main answer is just play Kevon Looney and Andrew Wiggins as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and they have somewhat of a hope that Draymond kind of got his mojo back a little bit in the fourth. I mean, you mentioned some of the defensive stops, which generally just kind of invigorate him all over the floor. He had that strip of Tatum. I think he had 9 rebounds, 4 steals in the game. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, he's still one of their most important players. You don't want him completely neutralized in a series. So, you know, maybe he hits a floater or two that'll get him going in Chase Center. He's generally better at home. His one good game in this series, game two, was at home. So, but, you know, we'll see in the fourth. I mean, the one thing Steve Kerr has at least shown now is he's willing to do it. He's willing to make a tough decision that in the moment of the fourth quarter, I was doubting that he could do, just because of, you know, institutional, you know, chemistry and just, like, you know, the moment for this core. I just didn't know if he would put Draymond Green on the bench, and he has shown that he's willing to do it now. So that would mean he would be willing to do it again, if it makes sense.
Okay, so I guess last thing we got to hit on here would be the Celtics offense. We haven't really talked about that yet, besides Draymond shutting down Marcus Smart there. So we got a chance to see the Celtics offense in crunch time, and we got a chance to see them stagnate, as they have many times throughout this playoffs, many times throughout the season. It was something that they cleaned up late in the regular season when they went on that crazy run. And it's not a surprise that it's going to come back in the playoffs, where it's the playoffs. And the main reasons, I feel like, and I wrote about this stylistic difference in my piece after the game, was Golden State, even in crunch time, Steph is coming down looking to take quick shots, looking to hit that transition defense. Doesn't matter how late into the game it is. He's always looking to do that because he knows when he has a shot, it's a shot. Boston, when they get to crunch time, they have a really bad habit of slowing things down. And I don't really think it's even necessarily fatigue. I think it's that they feel like they got to wind down the clock. They feel like they got to get like just the right shot. And obviously, when you do that, you don't get the right shot most of the time. It's usually going to be, is Tatum going to be able to find a matchup he can exploit? And he went for Bielisa, and that doesn't work because he's not taking Bielisa deep out into space where he can get ahead of steam and get by him. He's trying to get through him, and Bielisa's too big for that. So that didn't work. Then Draymond comes back in, and Draymond snuffed out so much stuff. So when you, from what you've seen in the past, what crunch time offensive approach has worked against the Warriors?
You know, I would say typically a star making plays. Ja Morant has roasted them a few key times in crunch time, including game two in Memphis, which was the, you know, felt like a big game at the time. Obviously, Ja Morant ends up going out for that series, but they could not stop Ja Morant getting to the rim. And, you know, it was pick your matchup, you know, just kill the guy at the point of attack, creative finishes at the rim. It was just a star being a star. You know, LeBron in the past, really typically, like, you know, against the Warriors defense in crunch time. And this is typical of NBA crunch time. Like, stars need to be stars and beat guys and make shots. And it sounds simple, but I like Jason Tatum just got to make shots, right? I mean, he's shooting 34%. Like, just beat your guy, make a shot, win a title. Like, that's probably like the simplest way to put it for Tatum, right? At this point.
I'll be sure to put that on the whiteboard in the locker room before the game. So
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It's funny because, like, Tatum has the skill set to do it. Jalen does too. I mean, Jalen, I think the big thing with Jalen is they generally don't want him creating a clear out by himself. Usually they want to curl him up from the corner off a screen and pitch it to him, and then he can make those reads from there, and that's where he's really at his best. And they weren't getting a lot of stops because, you know, Steph kept hitting shots, so they're not. And also, they lose that thread of, they were like, Boston was really good when it was running off of makes early in the series. Like, they were flying, taking the ball out of the basket, and they were getting a lot of surprise transition points out of that. They can do that in crunch time. Like, that's what's really going to get it done for them. And a lot of the time when they win in crunch time, it's Jaylen Brown pushing in transition and squeezing out extra possessions for them and scoring on those or getting fouls on those. Well, that's exactly what Steph was doing at the end of game four when Jaylen pressed him full court, like in the last minute or so of the game, and then fell over, and he just kind of blew him away and got that foul on, you know, that was a really tricky verticality call on Al Horford that got challenged. You know, like that's what Golden State's doing. I think that's the big thing that Boston needs to do. And then Boston also just needs to, I think they just want to get Tatum the ball in space more so that they can force a double, because that's the big thing. It's like they really want to draw a double so that they can move it. And also, just if they're going to find the mismatch they want, like Tatum, they got to re-clear out for Tatum, give Tatum, you know, have him back up, get some downhill space, or force the defense to come out and meet him out there, and then he can move the ball. Like, that's the way that they're going to get it done in crunch time. This whole thing of like trying to find him a mismatch and having him post up from the free throw line, there's Golden State is too quick to really allow him to have a ton of space. And the only time that really worked was he was in like the corner and then cut across to the middle and got the ball like right near the free throw line, and then just went straight through Andrew Wiggins and was able to draw two and kick it to Horford in the corner for three. Like, at least they were playing with some pace and motion, even if it was one of those like mismatch target, or I guess like ISO target plays for Tatum. Like, that's the kind of stuff they need to do more of. And Boston just has never been great at consistently doing that. They'll have nights where they do it, and then they have nights where they don't do it. And, you know, Golden State, I think, is a lot more consistent with it. And that's why Golden State is a dynasty, and that's why they just tied up the finals. So Be sure to follow all of our coverage at The Athletic. There's a lot of it. Slater, just tell us more about what you've been writing about, what you're looking more into as the series goes on.
Well, you know, at post game three, you know, the main story obviously was Steph Curry, but, you know, I also wrote about some of the help he got. You know, Andrew Wiggins, 16 rebounds in that game, played 44 minutes. He's just become like so essential. They can't even take him off the floor, basically, in this series, considering just the athleticism Boston has. Jordan Poole showed up finally for them in game four. That was an underrated key because they've been getting, you know, destroyed when Steph's been off the floor, and generally they just need an extra score. Jordan Poole at least seemed to solve some things. He was more patient. He took jumpers, wrote about that a little bit. And then I also wrote about Looney, who has allowed them to go away from Draymond Green at a point where he's struggling, where in their past you could never say that because they didn't have an option like that. So just some of the supporting role players within this, you know, Warriors run that is becoming very Steph Curry focused for understandable reasons.
It really is beautiful to see that Kevon Looney has been so good that he's made Draymond Green dispensable a little bit here. Like he's playing Draymond off the floor. And that's, you know, because I remember when Kevon like got his deal, everyone was like, Kevon Looney is really getting kept around by the Warriors, but he kind of like, it feels like he's barely been there the last couple of years. And to see the season he's having and the finals he's having has been amazing.
And he is up for another contract this summer. So pretty good timing for him, Kevon Looney.
All right. I guess we know who the new max is going to at Golden State. Well, it should be going to Slater because he's the real superstar there. So that'll do it for us. For Andrew Schlecht and Anthony Slater, I am Jared Weiss. Go to The Athletic. We have, I think we had 10 reporters at the game the other night. We got a lot of reporters there. We got a lot of coverage going. We got a lot of pods going. So make sure you're following The Athletic NBA show if you're not already. We will see you after game five.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.